I hate to tell you this, but it turns out that traditional bed sheets can harbor more bacteria than a toilet seat. I know, very disgusting. Not only is it extremely gross, but it also leads to acne, allergies, and stuffy noses. Miracle Made offers a whole line of self-cleaning, antibacterial bedding, such as sheets, pillowcases, and comforters that prevent up to 99.7% of bacteria growth and require up to 3 times less laundry. If you get hot at night, you'll appreciate Miracle Made's self-cooling properties, which makes use of silver-infused fabrics inspired by NASA. If it's good enough for the astronauts, it's good enough for me. They are thermoregulating and designed to keep you at the perfect temperature all night long. It makes a huge difference in getting better sleep every night. If you hate sleeping in bacteria, which I'm sure you do, or you're looking to get rid of your worn and uncomfortable bedding, you should check out Miracle Made. You'll feel like you're tucked into a luxurious hotel fancy bedding situation, but it'll be a lower cost than some of those other brands. Go to trymiracle.com/thestacks to try Miracle Made sheets for you or a lucky loved one. Order today and save over 40%. Plus, if you use our promo code THESTACKS at checkout, you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product that it's backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. If you aren't 100% satisfied, you will get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiraclemade.com/thestacks and use the code THESTACKS to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/thestacks to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode. Welcome to The Stacks, a podcast about books and the people who read them. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas, and it is The Stacks Book Club Day. My friend and fellow podcaster, Sam Sanders, is back. We're going to discuss You Made a Fool of Death with Your Beauty by Ekweke Emezi. It is a messy love story about second chances and grief. And today, Sam and I talk about the rules of the romance novel, whether or not this book is actually a romance novel, who we were rooting for, the mess of it all, and so much more. And yes, there are spoilers in today's episode. Make sure you listen through to the end of the episode to hear what our September book club pick will be. Quick reminder, everything we talk about on each episode of The Stacks can be found in the link in the show notes. If you want more of The Stacks, you got to join The Stacks Pack. It is only $5 a month. And if you join, you have access to our monthly virtual book club hangs, The Stacks Pack Discord channel, and a monthly Stacks bonus episode. Plus, you get to rest easy knowing that your support makes The Stacks possible. So if you like this podcast, join the Patreon at patreon.com/thestacks. Shout out to some of our newest members of the Stacks Pack, Justin Castillo, Tony Heald, Leah Capolucci, Carolyn Rasp, Mary Ann Diamond, and Kira DeLong. Thank you all so much for joining the Stacks Pack, and thank you to the entire Stacks Pack for being your wonderful selves. Okay, now it's time for my conversation with lots and lots of spoilers with Sam Sanders about You Made a Fool of Death with Your Beauty. All right, everybody, it is the Stacks Book Club Day. I am joined again by friend of the podcast, fantastic podcast journalist, cultural critic, human being, Sam Sanders. Welcome back, Sam.
Thank you for having me. I am right now just like envious of the bookshelf that is on the screen behind you because I have a lot of books and I have some bookshelf space, but there's just a large corner of my living room that right now is just piles of books. And I tell myself it's cute, but it's not. I lived
that life for 3 years. So I finally got bookshelves this year. So I feel very proud.
Beautiful.
But thank you. Thank you. They're from IKEA. Don't worry. Okay. You too can have this look.
Are we going to IKEA together to get bookshelves soon?
Yes. I need more bookshelves. Done. I actually need to hang some. Anyways. Okay. We're already on a fucking tangent, yes. Sam. Jesus. Okay. Everybody, today for Book Club, we are discussing You Made a Fool of Death with Your Beauty by Ekweke Emezi, which is a 2022 romance novel. And there will be spoilers today, people. So if you haven't listened, if you haven't read the book or listened to the book or whatever, don't blame us when we tell you what happens, because we're going deep. Let me give folks a quick primer if you haven't read the book or what, or you don't quite remember. It's about Faye, who is a Black woman living in Brooklyn who has suffered a terrible trauma when her husband and love of her life is killed in a car accident that they're in together about 5 years before the book starts. The book is sort of the beginning of her getting back into the dating scene. And then she meets a guy, Nasir, who takes her on vacation to his family's home in an unnamed island. She meets the father. There are sparks. And here we are. Okay, we always start here. What did you think generally of the book?
My first thought was, why aren't I reading more romance novels? This is so fun. It's just a thing that like hasn't been part of my book intake for a while. You know, it's probably the way that America teaches us what men should read and what women should read, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I was reading it the whole time and I was just like, oh, all I want in my life before I go to bed right now is a really fun romance novel. And this was that. I know that I liked it. I know that parts of it felt cheesy, but I thought that was the point. I know that parts of the plot didn't make sense, but also that was the point. And so if I'm just looking at this book in terms of like, what was my visceral experience in general, it was just quite fun. It was quite fun.
I'm totally with you. I went into this book being like, I don't really like romance. I've read a few romance novels that I've liked, but I'm a pretty like pragmatic and like, I'm not into a lot of feeling stuff. I don't like love in that way.
Yeah.
And I've talked about how I especially don't like romance novels because I'm a very slow reader. Mm. And because romance novels always end with happiness, I'm always like, ahead of the book in a way that if I could, like, I'll watch a rom-com movie because it's only like an hour and a half or 2 hours, but spending like 6 or 8 hours with something where I know where it's
they're
going
to end up together anyway. Yes.
Yeah. That's really hard for me. But I like this book because I actually didn't exactly know where it was going. I mean, I knew where it was going, but I wasn't sure how it was all going to play out. So I liked that. And I thought it was a fun ride and I loved the mess of it. And I loved the main character and like, it had such good writing. I just had a great time. There are I have notes also, but but like I overall, this was a yes for me.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the rules of the romance novel?
I'm guessing it always has to end with some kind of happy ending. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing there always has to be some kind of like wait until there's like the physical release of them having sex for the first time.
Okay.
And at some point, you have to assume that their love is going to fall apart. But no, I'm guessing. Okay. But I don't know. Okay, what are the rules?
So there's only two rules. Oh. One is happily ever after or happy for now.
Okay.
Basically, the book ends on a happy note. You know, maybe they don't get married, but like the book ends with them together. And then the other one is even more obvious, which is there has to be a central love story.
Yeah.
And those are the two rules of romance. They're very broad, I think. Well, I think Happy Ever After is pretty narrow, but I think the central love story is pretty broad. I don't know if you know this about this book, but this book caused a lot of controversy in the romance girly community because a lot of romance people don't think that this book is a romance novel.
I would love to read from page 134 for them. It is a romance novel.
Please read from page
and this
134.
Is what I highlighted to be like, oh, this is what I've been missing. Like, I remember as a kid, my mother read a bunch of romance novels, like Danielle Steele. And I would, like, sneak and, like, read a page or two. And I was like, this is crazy. But in my adulthood, I'm like, no, this is it. This is it. And there was one exchange that really made me, like, see when this kind of genre can, like, be at its best. She does it. Okay. And I want to find it. Give me 1 second. This is before they hook up. When there's some sexual tension over a can of mangoes, literally a can of mangoes.
So many mangoes.
Alim, how do you say it? Alim?
I've been saying Alim.
Alim,
I don't know.
Alim was liquid in that space, totally at ease. An ivory kitchen cloth slung over his shoulder. He walked over to a large refrigerator, his body reflecting warped on its surface, then pulled out a metal canister frosted with cold, shaking it before depressing its lever. A thick foam spurted out, deep and orange, splashing against the rim of the metal bowl on the counter. As Aleem steadied the flow, Faye smelled mango, sharp and sweet and tangy in the air. He put down the canister and tilted the bowl, then scooped some foam dripping off the rim with two fingers and held it out for her a taste. His eyes still on the bowl as he tipped it back and forth with his other hand, gauging the consistency. They've made a sex scene out of a can of mangoes. How
mango
is that
foam.
Not peak
mango
perfect
foam
romance
will never
novel?
Be the same.
Never be the same.
So listen, I'm with you. I think this is a romance. I think there is a conversation to be had with people who are much more entrenched in the romance community than you and I guess, about like what makes romance. But my experience of having publicly read this book and engaging with other readers, both romance readers and not, is that the controversy around whether this is a romance novel or not comes from the idea that she doesn't meet the central love interest until page 75 or something. And so,
but what's wrong with that?
Well, therefore, it's contemporary fiction. It's a story about a woman looking for love, but it's not necessarily a romance novel because the love story isn't central. I disagree.
The love story is very central.
Well, I think part of their love story is all the stuff that comes before. Mm-hmm. I think part of the love story is like she hooks up with Milan, then she meets Nasir, and then Nasir takes her to the island, and then she meets Aleem, and the moment she sees him, it is on.
Yeah.
We are headed to Mango Foam, people.
Yeah.
We're on the road to foam and Lacey Bras on a hike.
There you go.
Like, it's happening.
It's happening. I guess for me, it's like if the plot of the book feels rom-commy enough for me, it's a romance book. But I have a lower standard, I guess.
Yeah, we have a lower standard, but I also am just like, I think there is like some gatekeeping in the romance community about like what is and isn't. And I think like also because Akweke Emezi is a literary fiction writer as well.
And you know, they're very prolific as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's part of it is that people feel a type of way when authors who are not proclaimed romance authors try to write romance, like that there's some protection around that and maybe like some hypercriticism, because also, you know, when Emezi does write books, they're beloved books and they get a lot of attention. And I think that like romance readers and romance authors are used to being shit on in the industry. Like what you were talking about earlier, it's like a women's genre.
Yeah.
It's just love stories. It's always the, you know, so I think there's some protection over like when someone from the outside tries to do it that, it's like, are they doing justice or are they just trying to get a bunch of romance readers? You know, I think there's like all sorts of nuance, like with crossover into genre fiction.
Which makes me think a lot of like the debate over whether Lil Nas X's song Old Town Road was actually country or not. It's like we can have that conversation. Is it country or not? But if you're invested in the success of country music, you're just happy it's a hit.
Yeah.
It's a hit, right? And so like for me, it's like, did this book make readers happy? Was it popular? Could it possibly get more readers into romance books? Yes, then A-okay. A-okay.
Yeah, that's how I feel. That's how I feel. I'm like, I'll read more romance because I like this book.
Yeah.
Okay, let's dig into some of the book.
Okay.
So for me, I was like, I know I like this book because the first scene is a hot and sexy sex scene, and I hate slow burn.
Yeah, they're fucking in the first chapter.
They're fucking raw dog in
the bathroom
at a party.
Yes.
I'm just like, let's fucking go.
Yes.
But then we had to wait hundreds of pages for more sex.
Yeah, this is my biggest critique. Mm-hmm. The main character ruins a family.
Yes.
Enrages a potential suitor all before she's fucked the guy.
Yeah.
She hasn't even had sex with the guy.
It's big bachelor energy because on The Bachelor, it's like, I love you so much. I'm like, you've never even seen me naked.
Yes.
Like,
yes. Yes.
Like, you've never, like, we've never talked about our credit scores. We've never, like, you know nothing about me except for that, like, maybe I had a troubled past or something. But, like, you're willing to throw it all away, go on national TV, profess your love, get dumped, like, all this shit for a fucking stranger.
that part for me is always the hard part with romance. I'm just supposed to believe you see this person and you love them. I will believe you see this person and you want to fuck them. Like, yes. I will believe that. Yes. I am with you on that.
Yes.
But when it starts to be like, I'm willing
to give up my whole life for you. And we met yesterday and we haven't even done relations yet. I'm sorry.
Right. Like, I've licked foam off your finger. Which, like, is kinky.
Yeah,
but also. I don't know that it's like. I think it's interesting because I feel like Aleem, the dad, he's really the one who has the most to lose in this story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and he's the one who.
Who's kind of pushing for it.
Who's pushing for it, but he's the one who blows up the family. It's not her.
No.
Because
she's like
family.
Prepared to be like, I understand this is kind of fucked up. And he's like, no, 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 no. And this is what this gets to one of my larger critiques. And it didn't cloud my enjoyment of the book. It was still enjoyable to read. But as soon as you start to try to really, really, really get into all of these main characters' motivations, the motivations make no sense.
No sense.
So, like, this father character, Aleem,
yeah.
We also find out over the course of the book, and spoiler alert, he is queer. And at one point in his life, he had tried to introduce a male suitor to the family, and they shut it down. And he wasn't allowed to live that part of his life.
Because he's a very famous chef from this Caribbean island.
Yes.
And his kids were worried that it would ruin his career and also ruin the family image, and they would be the talk of the town, and they didn't want that for him or for them.
Exactly. And so to have this character who didn't follow love just for career considerations to then choose to follow love in a way that blows up his family, it feels out of character. From the Aleem that we know, he seems to be someone who does what he needs to do to keep his family and his career together. But making this choice in the book is the opposite of that. I'm confused. Right.
And he says it's because he did what everybody else wanted before and he's been lonely and unhappy.
Do you buy that?
I mean, I don't know. Because I feel like what the kids did was really fucked up, right? Like being like, you can't be with this person. But we're saying that ostensibly because we want to protect your career.
Your assets.
Yeah.
We live in your houses. You pay for us to live. Like, yeah.
And it's like, you know, the kids are just homophobic, right? Like, it's like they're, it's the thing of like, oh, you know, we don't care that you're gay. We just don't want other people to know because your career is doing really well. And like, I hate that for everyone.
Yeah.
But I do think that there is a kind of person who feels that way of like, I have been doing everything in my life for these kids since their mother died. They have been my whole life.
Yeah.
Every decision I've made, I've put them first. Mm-hmm. And now I want to put myself first. So I do sort of, I can see that, but also,
he could have done that for the dude earlier.
The way in which he's putting himself first,
yeah,
is it's not just I'm putting myself first. I'm actually saying, Nasir, fuck you.
Yeah,
like I don't give a fuck about
this
your feelings at all anymore.
Everything
and I think that's the hard part.
Everything about the way he's presented as a father makes him seem like the most caring father.
Right.
And so if he were to have a relationship where he fully gives his heart to, he's not going to try to find a person who is not his son's love interest. He's not going to, like, that was just like, I thought this guy loved his kids.
Yeah, it's a little bit aggressively like, I'm doing the opposite of what I've done to every single degree.
Yeah.
I also think, like, even just the fact that, like, I think another version of this character, which is a way less interesting book, is that when he starts to have feelings for Faye, he immediately goes to Nasir and says something.
Hey.
Or they all sit, you know, like that there's a way that it doesn't fall out that the gardener is like talking, like gossiping, like, hey,
although,
your dad's fucking some hot blonde bitch.
Always
with gold
love
hair.
It when that trick comes out of the bag. The nosy
love
gardener.
It. Love
it always
a nosy,
works.
Yes.
It always works.
Any nosy domestic worker, I'm just like, yes.
Yeah.
Is it a maid? Is it a chef? Is it a gardener? Like,
yeah.
we are watching and we are waiting for the fallout. Like in the movies where you see the like maid lean back behind the doorway and like peek at an affair or something. You're like, oh, she's going to blow this amazing. Up.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to know what you thought about the confrontation between Faye and Nasir, where we're basically told through all the context clues in this book to take her side. It felt weird. So
when he comes to her after he finds out from the gardener,
yes,
what has happened, and he's physically violent, grabbing all her clothes, calling her all sorts of names, that scene.
Well, and then also later on, when they interact again, at one point, she's like clawing at his face. Where was that? That happened
when
at the gallery?
Like the gazebo or the gazebo. Whatever.
Like she's like scratching his face and like,
oh,
how
no,
dare
at the
you?
Gallery.
At the gallery.
Yeah, at the gallery. Yeah.
I found many times the book was asking me to take her side mm-hmm. when clearly she was approaching something of a homewrecker. Like, yeah. In what world do you say anything besides, I'm very sorry? This family has boosted your art career. Yeah. Let you be on an island vacation for weeks, sure. and you're about to sleep with the dad after the mm-hmm. son obviously wants you. Once you get caught, don't you just say, yeah, my bad, and go home? She stays at the house
yeah.
and then scratches Nasir in the face. I don't understand that.
Okay, so I have a slightly different read on the first confrontation.
Okay.
Where he finds out, he comes to the house, he's calling her names, whatever. I, from the beginning, felt weird about Nasir because the first kind of scene where they're alone together, do you remember they're on the rooftop and mm-hmm. he's like touching her and he's yeah. like, hey, you want to like
yeah.
keep going or whatever?
Yeah.
And she's like, no, what the fuck are you doing?
Because Nasir has just seen her with Milan.
At a happy hour with Milan, who's his friend.
Yeah.
And the vibe of the way that that scene was described was so reminiscent of when I used to be a 20-something living in New York City, mm-hmm. hanging out with friends. I would be there with someone and mm-hmm. like their friend would be inappropriate towards me or like overly flirtatious or touchy or just like putting the moves on. Mm-hmm. And I would clearly be like, I'm not down with this. Mm-hmm. And then it would become this awkward thing of like male ego. And then I would start to feel stressed out because there's like that element of danger. And in that scene on page 22, Embezi writes, quote, he was hunting her. And that language, and yeah. she describes him as dangerous in that yeah. scene. And so that scene to me felt so like I recognized that entitlement.
Yeah.
Yes. And so when it comes out again, so far into the book in this like heightened emotional scene, to me, that was like, this is the guy he's always been.
Yes.
He's always been dangerous. He's yes. always been aggressive. He just knows how to be smooth and like yes. how to play it. And he's feels entitled to her and yes. by helping her that he deserves her or earned her. And I just don't buy into that. And like that scene was scary where he's like throwing
is
her
he
shit.
Is he gonna be violent with her? Yeah.
And he is. I mean, he puts his hands on her. Like he... I felt in that moment, regardless of what she had done,
she wasn't
he
safe.
He could be angry. Yeah. Yeah, she wasn't safe. And he's always been that guy. And
yes.
he was just trying to put the moves on her to
yes.
get her. And when he didn't get what he wanted, he freaked out.
Yeah. What I didn't understand, though, because this perfectly tracks, why do we go through that entire middle of the book with her not acknowledging in the way she writes about Nasir that dichotomy? I wanted more acknowledgement of, yeah, he's being such a good friend now, but in the back of my head, do I reminisce about that first night when he was hunting me? There's never
right.
discussion of that until it right. all blows up.
All blows up, yeah. And, like, also the thing where he's always like, we're friends, huh?
Yeah.
I found that so deeply manipulative.
And
that,
I wanted like, her to speak to it in the copy.
Yes.
You know?
I agree. I wish that it was talked about more because that is the key of that Nasir character to me. It's like
yes.
he's
that nice
he's
guy
not,
who's not a nice
he's
guy.
He's that finance bro
mm-hmm. who can
like,
pretend to be
feels,
nice.
Yeah, who feels like nice guys finish last, but he's not actually nice, and that's why he's finishing last.
And I wanted discussion
yet.
Of that. You know how like
yes.
in Gone Girl, the book, not the movie. The movie kind of fails. But in the book, when she spends pages just breaking down the myth of the cool girl.
The cool girl, yeah.
And it's just pages, like, talking about this trope of a person.
Right.
I wanted that about Nasir's character. Because he is a trope. We all know that guy. Talk about what that guy is and like, why he exists. We didn't get that.
And I wish, because like, I feel like with Milan, we get that sort of thing when she's talking to Joy about him. And she's like, he's, and Joy's like, you were fucking a teddy bear. And she's like, yeah, ew, gross.
Yeah.
And like, we sort of needed that about Milan of like, he's that guy who acts nice, but then you see these flashes of like entitlement.
Yes.
And like, all of that does track within his character. He's got this rich daddy who flies his friends out and this whole thing, and he's attracted to her, and he's like taking it slow, but always like trying to touch on her. It's just like, and then he throws it in her face. I was taking it slow. Like, okay, well, you're not entitled to have sex with anyone. So, you know, like, she doesn't actually owe you anything. You guys kissed a few times. Like,
yeah.
Granted, she, I think that like she, you know, abused or used his generosity in a way that like I'm not a super huge fan of, though I don't think that what she did there is like violence or that kind of rage. But like, she was toeing the line, knowing she wasn't into him and still going on this trip, like knowing she wasn't into him and still. You know, but then he was saying, we're friends, we're friends, you know.
I also don't get, like, she's not dumb, she's very smart. Why didn't she just leave before it got that crazy? I'm just like, all right, if I'm in this situation where a new potential love interest, who I'm not sure if I'm into yet, invites me to his family compound, but then I realize the dad's catching feelings for me and vice versa, but also the son's going to be gone for a while. My nervous ass, the first thing I would do would say, how can I remove myself from the situation? Which would be just going back home to Brooklyn.
Right. Or going to the hotel that the woman who commissioned the art said she could go to.
Yes.
Like, there were options. I mean, I think part of that is like, you have to suspend your disbelief, because if she leaves, the book ends.
Then there's no book. Exactly.
It's not a romance novel. It's not even a novel. It's just like a draft.
Yeah.
But I feel you. I feel like we're mature adults, and I feel like a lot of mature adults would do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I would have left even earlier. I think I would have left like as soon as my piece was done, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would have done the commission from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And like, and then I would have like gotten Aleem's number and text him and been like, you're super rich, like come to New York. Cause like, that's the other thing. Money's not an issue for these people.
Yeah. Because he's Does it all have to happen in the house where Nasir is? Y'all couldn't like just that, move that this weekend to New York? Yeah. Exactly. Also,
is she still paying rent in New York this whole time?
A lot of it. Like, let me tell you something. Also, is there a day job at all to speak of?
Unclear, unknown. Seems unlikely.
But this is the thing. It's like, we are going through and being kind of nitpicky. None of my nitpicking takes away from the general sense of enjoyment I had reading this whole thing.
Totally. She does this thing where, nitpicking it.
Yes, every sentence is fun. She writes in such a fun way. And I don't even know. I wish I had better words to describe it. Their writing is just so fun. Every sentence they write is enjoyable, and the writing leans into the absurdity and whimsy of those first romantic sparks that we've all felt. Like, it's cheesy, but isn't that what romance is at first? Cheesy. It's cheesy. Yeah. The mango is cheesy. The foam is cheesy. The sparks are cheesy, and like, their writing captures that feeling so beautifully. I can forgive all of my minor quibbles, all of them.
Yeah. And I honestly think that the writing is so good and there's so much to play with. But also the nitpicking, I think, is part of my enjoyment with reading in general, but specifically with reading this book. Like, so much of the fun of this book has been being on the Stacks Pack Discord and like having everyone weigh in and being like, what the fuck was this? Why did they do that? I hate this person. I love this part. And like, digging into all the different ways that we read these situations, because I think that is like, so many books are not juicy and fun to engage with.
Yes.
So even great books, like I think of what you talk about so much on your show and like in your work is about this idea of monoculture. And I feel like this book is a kind of book that could be a monoculture moment if more people were reading. Like it's the kind of book that you want to be like, oh my God, just read this book so we can talk about it. Like,
there you go.
I want to know what you think. And I feel like there's so little literature these days that is doing that, like just like feeling zeitgeisty just because it's fun.
Well, and it's the kind of book and the kind of topic that can allow smart people to argue about a book with low stakes. I feel like sometimes when I argue with people about books, the books are about such serious topics that it feels like the entire argument itself is fraught because it's so heavy.
Right. This and it's is like so, yeah.
Yeah. This is light. So I could argue with anyone about it for an hour and not feel bad at the end. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's
totally
fun. It's fun.
Totally. Wait, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back. It's important to me that the supplements I take are of the highest quality, and that's why for almost 4 years now, I have been drinking AG1. Unlike many supplement brands, AG1 is constantly searching for how to do things better. They're at 52 iterations of their formula and counting. Their team is always trying to find better ways to source, test, and find the best quality ingredients available. So many people have asked me if AG1 is actually the real deal. And trust me, there's a reason why I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword. It's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing. At each step of the process, AG1 goes above and beyond industry standards. I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because they totally obsess over product quality, the standards of manufacturing partners, and sustainable practices. Taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated. And AG1 simplifies this by covering my nutritional bases and setting myself up for success in just 60 seconds each morning. AG1 ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality, and I love that every scoop also includes vitamin C and zinc to support my immune system, which is so important for me, especially with the germs that the mini stacks have running around and going to a cesspool called preschool. I've stayed partnered with AG1 for so long because they make such a high quality product, and I genuinely look forward to drinking it every single day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 and K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/thestacks. That's drinkag1.com/thestacks. Check it out.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, we're back. Wait, I want to go back to the other part of the scene that you were talking about where she like puts her hands on Nasir at the art gallery.
Yeah.
She gets a phone call from another employee of another institution, the art gallery, who's like,
your man's over here.
Nasir's here and the vibes are off. Yeah. The vibes are off. Come quick. And so she goes and she goes full like mama bear and digs her hands, I think, into his face or chest or something and tells him basically, get the fuck away from my shit because I will go even harder on you next time. And I mean, this is how I read this scene. And this is maybe me defending violence. So sorry, everyone. But the art installation is wedding rings and blood. And the rings include the actual wedding ring of her dead
husband. It's a big deal.
And his actual blood. Yeah. And I think that, like, you know, it's like you can fuck with my clothes in your dad's house or whatever. But when you fuck with my livelihood, my professional career, and the actual like sentimental pieces that I have left of my dead husband, like, I don't think she could control herself. Like, I don't think that she wanted to, and I don't think she wanted to leave any space for Nasir to ever fucking try it again.
Oh, for sure. And I get that, but I'm also like, if I am her, as soon as Nasir comes in and goes off on me for making out with his dad,
yeah,
I'm leaving the island.
Yes. I'm leaving.
She stuck around for how many weeks? Weeks.
Yeah.
Weeks.
Yeah, she stuck around for too long. But in that scene, I get it.
Well, also, I wonder, was she sticking around to protect her art? Was she worried about this very thing happening? This is where I would have loved a little more, you know, unveiling of the internal monologue. Like, I would have loved to just have more of an explanation of what was going on in her head, not so much of the, like, ennui between her and Aleem.
Yeah, okay, I get that. I fully get that. Okay, who do you think... Well, first of all, do you think this book is messy?
Oh my God, it's so messy.
That's what I think. But a lot of people were telling me it's not that messy. And I'm like,
I'm not reading enough romance novels.
Well, I don't know what else could be messier.
Wow. Everyone is... Everyone, and I say this with love as one of the alphabet people, most of the main characters are messy bisexuals, who we love. Yes. They are fornicating, not just on the mainland, but also in the islands. Mm-hmm. There is wealth. There are celebrity chefs. There's art. There is fornication that starts out in a bathroom at a party in chapter one. How is this not messy?
Well, and then there's an affair with someone's, your situationship's father.
Literally. That is mess. Capital M.
To me, this is so messy. But I think also, and I said this in the Discord with the Stacks, because we've been talking about this all month. This book has been the most engaging book on the Stacks Discord. Oh my gosh. I've never been so active. I've been doing the show for years. We've had the Discord for, I think, 2 years now. It's never been so active.
But
I think some of it is the cultural use of the phrase mess. I think Black people use mess different than white people.
Tell me more. I'm intrigued.
I'm not sure how white people are using it, but people were like, it's messy, but they're like, it's not that messy because they're both adults and they take accountability for their actions, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no.
No one took accountability.
But also to me, mess is not, it has something to do with who took accountability down the road or in the moment or whatever. To me, mess is, are we talking about this at brunch? And let me tell you, if I am Joy, I am texting all of our other friends being like,
girl,
you guys, Faye is going nuts
Faye
out there.
Is doing
Listen
it.
To this story. Listen, like, to like, me, that's mess. It's the gossip. It's the chisme. It's like the juicy, crazy shit. Regardless of how it plays out, mess is like that stuff in the moment where you're like, holy shit, girl, what are you doing?
If you want to gossip about it, it is inherently messy. That's mess.
I agree.
Yes, same page.
Okay, that's how I feel. So I think maybe, I don't exactly know how the whites are using it. Caucasians, please let us know. But I feel that the way that I use mess as a Black person, this book is that.
It's mess. It's mess. You know it's going to be an Amazon Prime Video, either movie or TV show?
I think Michael B. Jordan's company. Do you think he'll be in it? Do you think he plays Nasir?
I sure motherfucking hope so. I hope he's Aleem. Let him be Aleem, baby.
No, I hope he's Milan because I want that scene in the beginning with him. Hello. No, I think Aleem has to be a little bit older because he's like almost 50.
What if Aleem could be Blair Underwood? I never get tired of him. I never get tired of him.
Do you think? I mean, listen, I'm always gonna go Idris, but you know, that's just me.
I don't know who's managing Idris's career right now, but I'm just like, where are you, my dude?
Yeah, where are you? You made a fool of death with Your Beauty is Waiting.
Literally, come do it. That would actually be great as long as you keep him from contributing any tracks to the soundtrack. He cannot do that.
Does you know, he's tried
to rap for a while. He's for sure a DJ, and he's released a few rap tracks, and we're like, baby. No, James Bond need not rap. You don't need to do that.
I have no idea.
Yes. After this is done, go search for his music on Spotify.
I will be linking to this in the show notes, people. Don't you worry.
Who should play Faye?
You know, I'm so bad at coming up with actresses. Can Dominique Fishback do it? I just love her.
I do love her. I would not mind.
I think she might be Joy.
A part of me, I don't know if Halle Bailey can do it.
No.
And I don't know if Lupita is young enough at this point to do it.
Can Zendaya do it?
She's too light skin. Sorry. And no shade to literally love
no
my light
skin. No shade to my people. She's
who
too light.
Do
okay,
it?
Who could do it? I always feel like this is the hard part with Black actresses is like, they're so few and there's like always such a huge age gap in the like 20 something range. It's like, because Black people can play young. So it's like all these women in their like 30s and 40s playing 20-year-olds, but there's not actually 20-year-olds. I feel like I'm missing an obvious person, though.
Although I do like the idea of Dominique Fishback.
I do. I love her. I think she's so talented. So,
and it'd be a turn for her because her character in Swarm was very flat on purpose, you know, this like detached serial killer. I wonder...
Oh, wait, I have someone.
Who?
What about... Janelle Monáe.
Oh.
Because she acts.
She sure does act.
And I feel like she kind of has the sad girl vibe.
And she's very queer.
She's very sensual. She's an artist. She sort of has that artisty thing. She's fluid and like, I would believe her kind of flip-flopping through all of these men.
Yeah.
You know, I don't hate it.
I don't hate that either. Let's call some studios up. Well, let's call Michael B. Jordan.
Let's call Michael. Yeah. Do you have his number?
I don't know. But now I'm on a mission to find it.
I know you're friends with Barry Jenkins now. So, and Chance the Rapper. I know you have all these famous friends now. So maybe you can get us a meeting face to face.
Michael B., if you are listening, I will happily be the intimacy coordinator for this shoot.
And I will also star if you need someone just for some of the scenes with Michael.
Yes,
I'm avails. Wait, I wanted to ask you, who is the messiest of them all?
I know what it felt like to be 28. Okay. And I was almost a homewrecker myself at 28. That's another conversation. So I'm not going to hold all that against Faye. Aleem should know better. You are how old? You have how much at stake with your career? You've been down so many of these roads before, especially knowing that he has gone through a similar kind of grief with his wife dying years ago. Mm-hmm. Him knowing that kind of loss almost makes it feel like he was predatory on Faye, who was so fresh and raw in those emotions still. So he's the messiest.
I think
like,
so, too.
Do better.
I think so,
you
too.
Knew your son brought her out here. He was obviously interested in her. You have a duty to just check your penis. Mm-hmm. You just have a duty as a father. So he's the messiest. Although he's the one I most want to have a drink or more with.
Or have a mango-flavored cocktail, perhaps?
Listen, he can make me a mango dinner, okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the messiest, He's the messiest.
He's
like,
the
fuck
messiest.
Fuckboy energy. Fuckboy energy.
Big. But I feel, okay, so here's what I think. Mm-hmm. I think that he is not far from the grown-up version of Nasir. There's the entitlement. He feels like he can have what he wants. Uh-huh. He feels like he can manipulate the situation to And no, not to take any agency away from Faye, because I think she, you know, we follow her. It's her sort of her point of view. We're closest to her point of view.
Yeah.
Throughout the book. But so I'm not suggesting that she was manipulated into this relationship. But I do feel like the entitlement to her does not feel far away from the entitlement that Nasir expresses throughout the book. However, he's just more mature. He's smoothed it out. It's not so obvious. Yeah. It's sort of like this underlying thing.
Yeah.
That like he should get what he wants regardless of what happens to his family, regardless of what happens to Faye. You know, like the fact that Nasir came into the house and was violent with her in his home, like that it was a dereliction of his duty as well.
Well, like, and then to even let her stay after that.
Yeah.
He could have been the adult and said, things have gotten a little bit too heated. I think everyone needs some space. It might be best if you are not here for a while. And he's like, stay.
Yeah.
Oof.
Yeah. I definitely think he's the messiest. I think, you know, I heard you and I are both the children of age gap marriages.
Yeah. Yeah.
But a lot of people I've heard from were unhappy with the age gap. And I was like, oh, it never occurs to me that people have a problem with age gaps because my parents were 17 years apart.
Totally.
And yours were even
42
more,
years apart. My mother had me when she was 28 and my father at that time was 70. And you want to hear about mess. I can say this because they are literally both deceased now and they would laugh at this. my mother was fresh out of college teaching her first teaching job at like an elementary school in Seguin, Texas. And one of the other teacher friends she became close with, an older teacher, she got cancer. And so my mother, a good friend, would go visit her colleague who had cancer in the hospital all the time. The colleague's husband at that time is my dad.
Oh.
Did
the colleague die of cancer?
The colleague died of cancer. And within a year, my mother was married to her widower, my dad. And we all think that she might have been pregnant at the wedding with my brother.
Oh,
and I'm never
going
to say
mess.
No to that because it got me here.
Yes.
Also,
there's mess.
Yeah.
There's mess.
And my mother talked about this time in her life with me pretty frequently when I was old enough to talk about it with her. Because, you know, mothers love telling their gay kids all the mess. And she basically was like, I knew what I was doing.
Oh, see? I feel like that makes me like the book more somehow. Like, I feel like it makes me feel better about some of the mess of the book of like, maybe they actually do end up happily ever after.
Maybe they do. Also, this is a thing. Most relationships start out messy. My favorite hobby is to read the New York Times vows section.
Yes.
And guess which relationship actually began with cheating, because they will always mask it with some euphemism. Like when they first met, they could not be together. And it's like, oh, so one of them cheated. One of them cheated, right?
Yeah. Or like when they first met, they were both in another relationship. But eventually time brought them back together. And you're
so
like,
it's like this is the way it works. Like this is the way it works. And like whether it's in the New York Times vows section or in a romance novel, this is kind of the human condition.
Yeah. No, totally. I mean, I think another thing that's like so present in this book, and I think is done really well in the book, but I'm curious to hear what you think, is how grief shows up. Do you feel like the book portrays grief well? Do you feel like, I know that you're kind of in a season of grief right now as your mother passed away recently. Like, did it resonate with you at all?
Oh, it does. I appreciated how this book deals with the emotional complexity of grief. So Faye, she is still shaken up about the loss of her husband, who she lost in the most brutal way, but she's also still horny, and like both can be true. So like the moral of the story on grief with this book is that like your grief can actually contain a multitude of emotions. I can be grief-stricken and horny at the same time. I can be a mess over the death of a loved one and still be messy, right? Like, that is the through line of this book, and, like, that's real. So I appreciated that. It was real. This idea that people are just, like, when they're grieving, they're just in a corner being grief-stricken. No, they're living lives, too. They're living lives, too, and they can still be a-ho. A-ho.
Yeah. And, like, make bad decisions. But I also feel like so much of, like, grief I feel like grief stories and love stories go together.
Yeah, you know? Oh, for sure.
Like, and I feel like that's what makes the grief, I think, in this book feel very resonant, is because if this book was just a story of a woman who is coming to terms with the loss of her husband and trying to get back out there, but without the sort of like forced love story part, I don't think this book is successful. I think that totally. The grief needs the love to be able to sort of show the juxtaposition, but also the complementary feelings of like the fear and the loss and the like the stress of new love and all of that. I think they tie together really well.
Oh yeah. Well, also, what is romantic love if just a respite between bouts of grief? Mm. All relationships end in grief. One of you right. dies and one of you leaves the other one. Bottom right. line. And so romantic love is actually always dancing around grief. And it was refreshing right. to see a romance novel also talk about grief too. You know, I liked it.
Yeah. And like talk about it well. Like give it real
yeah.
time yeah. and energy and not just be like, she lost her husband and she's a sad girl now. You know?
Yeah, like, yeah. It's
I feel
like
that's
into
so
it.
Often how like books handle grief. If it's like, she's so sad, she's crying in her room all day. It's like, okay, well, it's been 5 years. Like, she's sad and it probably hits her in waves, but like, let's dig in. And I think, you know, there's so many passages in the book that I thought were really, really well written, like really just beautifully written. There's the speech about the fish at the dinner for her, about like yeah. the softness of grief. Let me see if I can find it. I have it on 147. Oh, so he's talking about this lionfish that's like venomous to humans, and he says the devastation the lionfish wreaks reminds me of grief, the way it destroys so many around us, the way it feels like a lifetime of venom spikes piercing through us.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's just like there's so many lines or moments like that. There's the Space the Sun speech on 175 that I thought was so fantastic. I just, there's so many of these like quick moments where I'm like, I recognize that. I feel seen in my grief, and like, you know, like
yeah,
it hits.
And like my only critique, and it's not even really a critique, like 15% more of that and 15% less of a whole chapter where they're not fucking, but they're talking about mango juice.
Yeah.
And I loved both of those things, but I would have like tilted the scales a little more to that kind of, you know, exposition on emotion. So much of it was exposition on sexual frustration, which is what romance novels do, but she's so good at talking about the emotion when she goes there.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like I wanted more sex, just period.
Because they don't actually fuck until after page 200.
Yeah, I think it's like 253.
Wow. I love that you notated it.
I did, because I was like, when the fuck am I getting sex again? Like, this is killing me. And then we get it on this hike where she's like in a dress on a hike. And
yeah,
I just
like, come on now. Come on.
I mean, we're Angelinos. We hike. It's not a dress moment. And it's not like she's in a sporty like tennis dress. She's wearing a lacy bra on a hike. And I'm just like, listen.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
spandex is sexy too, okay? Like, can she be in a legging? Can we have a sports bra moment?
Yes.
I'm asking. Okay. The last thing that I just want to quickly touch on is the title and the cover. The book is called You Made a Fool of Death with Your Beauty, and it's a lyric from a Florence and the Machine song, Hunger.
Which surprised me because there are no white people in this book.
Not a single one.
Not
it surprised
one.
Me as well, but I love the title.
Oh, it's great. It's great. I thought it was like an old Nigerian proverb until I Googled it. And I was like, oh, Florence. That ancestor Florence.
I mean, I like it because I feel like there's so much talk of like beauty and youth and death in this book. And also like the foolishness of all of it. Like it just all worked for me. The cover is mediocre for me. I like the color. I have the orange one. The green one, I hate the color. But I don't know. The cover is like striking, but also sort of means nothing.
I mean, I was just like, why is there a hummingbird? Mm. Like, okay.
Yeah.
I don't ever know what to think about book covers. I'm a person who loves books but has no universal theory on book covers. And I actually always hate it when people say, you can judge a book by its cover, because it's like, I can't. I don't know how to.
Really? Well, okay. I just know what I like. And usually if I see something that I think is ugly, I assume that whatever's inside the book is not going to be to my liking because they thought that the cover was worth putting their book on. Ooh. Inside their book. That's how I feel. But I'm a hater.
I love it.
Well, Sam, thank you so much for being here. This was such a joy. Everyone, you can find Sam at his podcasts Intuit and Vibe Check. Thank you. This was so much fun.
Yes. I'm so plugged in now to just continuing to read romance novels the rest of this year. I want you to send me recommendations.
Okay.
And listeners, if you're so inclined, let me know, what romance should I be reading? Because
oh my God,
this was fun.
People will let you know. I can't wait to hear what you read next. Thank you so much. You are the best. I will talk to you soon. And everyone else, we will see you in the stacks. All right, y'all, that does it for us today. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you again to Sam Sanders for being our guest. And now for the big announcement, our September book club pick is Monsters, A Fan's Dilemma by Claire Dieterer. It's an examination of the age-old conundrum around the art versus the artist. Listen next week to find out who our guest will be for our September 27th discussion. If you love the show and want inside access to it, head to patreon.com/thestacks and join the Stacks Pack. Make sure you're subscribed to The Stacks wherever you're listening to your podcasts. And if you listen through Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please leave us a rating and a review. For more from The Stacks, follow us on social media at The Stacks Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads, and at The Stacks Pod _ on Twitter. And you can check out our website, thestackspodcast.com. This episode of The Stacks was edited by Christian Duenas with production assistance from Lauren Tyree. Our graphic designer is Robin McCright, and our theme music is from Tagirigis. The Stacks is created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas.